It's time to chit chat. I'm Richard. Let's talk about what's streaming, what I'm liking, what I'm not so much enjoying, and maybe even some random tangents along the way. All right, let's chit chat. All right, daily chit chatters. Today, I have been exposed to another YouTube video which told the story of one Clive Waring. He is a British citizen who in 1985 had a terrible accident. It affected his brain, and by accident I mean it was a virus that actually gave him fevers and got into his bloodstream and attacked a part of his brain. And if you are familiar at all with the movie 50 First Dates, I believe the 7-second Larry or whatever his name is in that film that suffered a similar fate to Drew Barrymore's character in the movie, I'm sure that it was based on Clive after watching his story on YouTube. It was just a video that had probably recently been updated about real human, you know, if something like that, like called Real Human Stories. I think that was it. And it popped up, and it was actually he was the center of a documentary closer to when he had that incident in the 80s, in the mid 80s. They made a documentary then, and then they revisited him. They revisited him 20 years later or so. And of course, they keep checking up with him because he is still alive. But I want to detail some of the things and encourage you to watch his story because it's fascinating and tragic. It's sad, but also has happy moments to it. So he used to be a musicologist, a conductor, tenor, and a keyboardist. And at this point, he suffers from chronic anterograde and retrograde amnesia. They say it's a very rare and intense form of amnesia, probably one of the worst cases of amnesia known in the medical science history. And he's suffering now with that, and has been since 1985. He lacks the ability to form new memories. And this is no joke. They say he might have about 7 seconds of cognitive memories. And they say it can last up to 30 seconds, give or take. You know, you'll literally be having a conversation with Clive in today's day and age. And if he starts the conversation with you, by the time he finishes his sentence and you finish yours, he's probably already forgotten where you guys started from. So it's fascinating, and obviously it's a medical mystery that is pretty rare. They say this type of virus doesn't usually get into the bloodstream and attack the brain, that just in very rare cases it can do this. Okay. He can not recall certain aspects of his past memories, frequently believing that he's only recently awoken from a comatose state. Waring's dual retrograde or anterograde amnesia, you know, it's dual because it has a little bit of both. It's a phenomenon referred to as a 30-second Clive or a 7-second Clive. So that's based on him, really. So he had a really nice musical career. It does go into detail in the documentary that I watched that he performed on BBC Radio and was very good at making compositions and also rearranging music. He was very talented. That's one thing too. If you put him in front of a piano nowadays, he will play, and he has somewhere in his muscle memory the ability to play the piano, but after he's done playing, he'll forget he just played the piano. So fascinating. Anyway, he was responsible for the musical content of BBC Radio 3 in the 80s. He also was in charge of performing pieces for Prince Charles and Princess Diana. He recreated an authentic score with instruments, and he meticulously researches the history and puts the scores together based on the Bavarian royal wedding, which took place in Munich, February 22nd, 1568. So in that case, he was meticulously researching that and putting it together for their wedding. But he also would do deep dives into the history of all musical compositions. Anyway, that's the whole point, is like he was pretty much a genius and still has some of that knowledge locked in his brain, and that ability still in there too. It was on March 27th, 1985, that Wearing, he's obviously an expert in early music, and he was in the height of his career. But he contracted a herpes viral encephalitis. Anyway, it's a herpes simplex virus that attacked his central nervous system. And ever since that point, he's been unable to store new memories and unable to associate memories effectively or to control his emotions. Well, at the beginning, he wasn't able to control his emotions. Actually, in the 20 years after his medical incident, he has calmed down a lot, which is great. I think just with time, and even though consciously he doesn't realize he's getting used to his condition, I think subconsciously he is in there deep in his mind, in the caverns of his mind. He is actually becoming accustomed to not knowing what's going on around him and forming new memories at that moment only, and then they're fleeting and they go away. So he actually is pretty well adjusted now. But at the beginning, he was very frustrated, as one would be, because he's a very smart fellow. And then people are telling him, "Oh, actually, you're suffering from amnesia." He's like, "No, you're going mad. I'm not doing that. You're wrong." So he, and when they say he's unable to associate memories effectively from his past, it's talking about he kind of knows he, was this big conductor that conducted symphonies and orchestrations and different events and big events and big concerts. He knows that he did that, but doesn't quite remember that he was there doing it. But he does know that that happened to him and remembers that he once did that without having the actual memory of being there in the moment. So he has those memories and the memories of like having kids, and his current wife is his like biggest tie-in memory that keeps him grounded in this day and age and when he first suffered from the incident. So he had this profound case of total amnesia, still does, as a result of that illness because of damage to the hippocampus, and that area is definitely required for transferring memories from short term to long term. So that's broken. So he gets the short term, doesn't ever transfer to the long term, and then it's gone. He's completely unable to form lasting new memories. He can do about 7 to 30 seconds, like I said before, and he spends every day waking up, regaining consciousness for the first time. "I'm finally awake," he'll write in his journal. "This is the first moment where I'm awake, the first moment I'm seeing a human being. You guys that I'm talking to right now are the first human beings I've seen since my illness." And he'll say that a lot, and he's like, it's like unto death what I've experienced. I have no dreams, I have no memories of my unconscious times. It's only now that I'm here in the moment, but without being able to remember my dreams or my life It's like being dead. And so that's the sad part of it, is he's poignantly pointing out that that's what it feels like, because that's what it's like unto. So he constantly believes that it's the first moments that he's ever been awake from that comatose state. And if you're engaged in a discussion with him, he's only able to provide answers here and there, but can't really stay in the flow of the conversation for longer than a few sentences. And then early on, when he was angered, because you were pressuring him too much. But nowadays, he's not so much angry. He's a lot more happy-go-lucky. He remembers little of his life before 1985, unfortunately, but he does know that he has children from an earlier marriage. He just doesn't always remember their names. And the love for his second wife, Deborah, which he had just gotten married to her 18 months before his illness, which is so fleeting, so fast, that's undiminished. That's like the biggest, like I said, the biggest tie he has, the constant he has is her love. So he greets her joyously every time they meet. And I've seen this on YouTube in several videos, in the documentary and other videos too. He's like, oh, there you are, my darling, my Deborah. Oh, my goodness. Oh, I haven't seen you in years. Or, I haven't seen you since the illness. Even though she really could have just left the room momentarily. Nowadays, she visits once a month, but back in the day, she would visit every day, and it just was painful because he'd call her after a visit and not remember anything from the visit. Anyway, he can remember all the things around him, like if he's eating dinner, he knows that that's chicken, but he doesn't necessarily link it with taste, and he does forget what food he's eating by the time he's eaten it. So he has a diary that he writes in every day because he was encouraged to record his thoughts. But page after page to this day is filled with stuff like 8:31 a.m. Now I am really completely awake. But then in the next journal entry, he's like, it's 9:06. Now I'm perfectly overwhelmingly awake. But then he looks above and he's like, that I wasn't really awake then. And then, you know, by 9:34 a.m., he's like, now I am actually superlatively awake. And he'll put check marks next to it because that's when I'm really awake. Those other entries, that wasn't me. That was an unconscious version of myself. That wasn't me. This is the real me. So he forgets having made those entries within minutes, and he dismisses those writings. He's like, I don't know who did that. Or that was a different version of me. It wasn't the real me. So he often says he's waking up for the first time. And so it's just wild that he still doesn't ever retain the memory. It's just a medical incident since the memories can't transfer to the long term. And, he's definitely got the procedural memories, you know, the memories that help you do tasks. Those are still with him. The muscle memory is what I call that. So some things you can teach him through watching the same video recording over and over and over again. Where maybe one day he'll watch the video and he'll start to anticipate what's going on, but he will have no actual memory of ever seeing that video. So that's very interesting. And like I mentioned earlier, he can play the piano, and they're very complex piano and organ pieces, and he can sight read, but doesn't really remember that he's doing that at the moment. In fact, in 2005, in one of the documentaries that I watched on YouTube, he says, and I quote, you're the first human beings I've seen, the three of you, two men and one lady, the first people I've ever seen since I've been ill. No difference between day and night, no thoughts at all, no dreams. Day and night the same, blank, precisely like death. And then the interviewer says, is it very hard? No, it's exactly the same as being dead, which is not difficult, is it? To be dead is easy. You don't do anything at all. You can't do anything. When you are dead, it's been the same, exactly. Do you miss your old life? Yes, but I've never been conscious to think that, so I've never been bored or upset. I've never been anything at all. It's exactly the same as death, no dreams even, day and night the same. When you miss your old life, you say, yes, I miss my old life. What do you miss? The fact that I was a musician and in love. Anyway, that's my preview for you. It's fascinating, actually, just to watch it, even though I've given you the whole rundown of, like, A to Z of what his life has been from 1985 to now. But watching the interview with Deborah, look at it from her point of view and what she's had to go through. Listen to the interview. It's fascinating. All right? I recommend this. It's The Man with the 7-Second Brain, or The Man Who's Constantly Unconscious, is one of those titles, was the original documentary. Look it up on YouTube. It's a fascinating journey. And let me know what you think. DailyChitChat_ or streamiversity@gmail.com. I have blabbed on long enough, but this has been obviously very interesting and enlightening for me. Hope you feel the same. Have a good one. We'll talk to you later.